generalistic simulation of the evolution of single and binary neutron star system. So this is the plan of the talk. I will just motivate a bit of this work, and then I have essentially two parts. The first one, in which I will speak about gravitational waves from the collapse of neutron stars to black holes. And then I will speak about gravitational waves from equal mass and unequal mass binary neutron star system during the last phases of near spiral and merger. So why we are interested in gravitational waves? I don't know if I really need this slide, but okay. So gravitational waves are signals produced by the motion of objects, and since they are very weak, the chances to detect them it's higher if they are produced by the motion of compact objects such as neutron stars and black holes. Because of their nature, they can reach us unperturbed. So instant, while electromagnetic signals can be scattered or absorbed while traveling to us, gravitational wave signals can arrive to us without essentially any interference. They can provide information about the inner structure objects like neutron stars or stars that have the mass like the mass of the sun, but a radius of 10 kilometers. So will provide us information on how matter behaves at these very large densities. This is something that we cannot obtain through electromagnetic observation. They could provide also the first direct evidence of black hole existence. And people think that like X-ray and gamma ray astronomy did years ago, also gravitational waves will be able to open a new window on the universe so that we could even observe objects that maybe we don't observe up to now. So why we need the numerical relativity to study sources of gravitational waves? Well, as I said, the most powerful sources are given by neutron stars and black holes. And in general, their dynamics is described by the equation of general relativistic hydrodynamics or magnetohydrodynamics, depending if you have magnetic fields or not. But these equations are strongly nonlinear, and in general, it's not possible to get an analytic solution for all the cases in which you are interested, especially in the case in which I'm speaking now. You really need to solve the system numerically. And the numerical relativity is a branch of astrophysics, and in the last year started to produce a lot of gravitational wave signal that can actually be used by people doing real detection in order to know at which frequency they should look, for example, or in some cases it can even help to extract the signal from the noise of the detectors. So what we use to do our simulation and the simulation I will present today are essentially a code that is called Whiskey, and it's based on an infrastructure which is called Cactus, which is a computational framework that was developed in the last 10 years in a collaboration between the Albert Einstein Institute, the Center for Computational Technology at Louisiana State University. And it's a general infrastructure that can be used for the solution of any kind of partial differential equation on 3D, three-dimensional grids. But it provides especially a lot of tools that can be used to solve Einstein equations. And on top of that, we have developed the Whiskey code, which instead is a code very much more recent that has been developed initially in a collaboration between the Albert Einstein Institute and CISA. And it solves the equation for general relativistic hydrodynamics and magnetohydrodynamics in a curved background. So essentially, while Cactus provide the evolution equation for the metric components solving Einstein equation, Whiskey provide the evolution equation for the matter and the magnetic fields, and then provide a stress-energy momentum tensor. So this is a short list of some simulation done with Whiskey. Whiskey has been studied is being used to study neutron star oscillations. Developing instabilities in neutron stars, like diamond bar mode instability. That's been used to study binary neutron stars. This is one of the topics of this talk. Mixed binary system in which you have a neutron star orbiting around a black hole. Rotating collapse to black hole, which is also part of this talk. It has also been used to study core collapse supernova by the group of Christian Ott and collaborators. And more recently, it has been used also to study the evolution of matter electromagnetic fields around binary black holes. So the first part is about the neutron star collapse. This is a summary of the work that has been done in the last years using Whiskey. There are several people that are involved, so I didn't have the space to include all the names, but mainly it's Luca Baiotti, me, Luciano Rezzolla, Ian Oak, Eric Schnetter, and other people. So we were interested in studying the gravitational wave signal that is emitted by a neutron star when this star collapsed, forming a black hole, trying to understand which kind of signal you could expect and if that signal could be detected by gravitational wave detector. So the first work were done by Luca Baiotti and collaborators, in which they were studied the sequences of uniformly rotating neutron stars. So here there is a plot showing the initial data. So this is essentially the energy density at the center of the star, and this is the total mass of the system. So this show configuration for non-rotating neutron star, what are called TOV, and this is for rotating neutron star, which rotate at the maximum angular frequency before mass shedding limit. And this work were considered a sequence of neutron star between non-rotating and fastly rotating, labeled with these Fulham dots. And during the simulation, it was simply used a very ideal equation of state, ideal fluid equation of state, which is a pressure related to the rest mass density rho, a specific internal energy epsilon by this relation where gamma is a constant equal to 2. So just to get an idea on dynamics, here I have a movie that shows the evolution of a uniformly rotating neutron star. This was the model with the highest value for the rotation. It's called the model D4. The ratio of the total angular momentum over the square of the mass, J1 square, was the order 0.5. For uniform rotation, you can arrive up to 0.6, if I remember correct. And what I'm showing here is the evolution of the rest mass density, which is indicated with this color for blue to purple. And then you will also see the gravitational wave emission, both as volume rendering in the main picture, but also as the signal in this inset. So this is just the camera that has been zooming in. So the star starts to collapse. It maintains always axis symmetry. There is a burst of gravitational radiation with the collapse. There is a formation of the black holes. This is essentially a signal related to the ring down of the black holes. And then nothing else is left outside. There is no disk formation at all. So all the matter goes inside the black holes, and then the gravitational wave signal goes outside. And this is the computational domain on which the solution was solved. And it is essentially the signal that you get. So it's an exponential increase, which is associated with the part of the collapse. And then you have this like a sinusoid, which is essentially related with the normal mode of the black holes.
Bruno, we don't see any I don't see any in that movie. Mm-hmm. I think there is gives indication that it's aspherical. Is that just
You will see other movies in which this is much more evident. So this case was not so, it's not so evident from the movie, but I mean, it's not spherical at all, this object. But it's still not so fast rotating because this is, say, J1 squared is 0.5. However, other movies for models that were at a larger value for that, and then you really see that they're almost toroidal even, if you go to fast rotation.
And the black hole that forms at the end,
it's a Kerr black hole.
Which pretty much has this 0.5 value.
Yeah, I think so, because there is no matter left outside, so everything goes inside the black hole. And angular momentum and mass are perfectly conserved in this simulation. So there were run several simulations with different initial models. Gravitational wave signal was computed, and in particular was computed the amount of energy that is transmitted via gravitational waves. So this is the energy carried away by gravitational wave as a function of the ratio J over N squared for different initial models. So the model that I was showing you before was something like here.
So and these models are for a fixed equation of state?
Yes, fixed equation of state. So the equation of state is always an ideal fluid equation of state. In this work, the equation of state were not changing. The things that were changing were the initial perturbations. So in some cases, you start with a model that is already unstable, and then the collapse is simply triggered by truncation error in your numerical code. And these are the filled triangles. Or otherwise, you can accelerate a bit the collapse introducing a perturbation in the pressure. So these are the filled square, in which an initial perturbation in pressure of 2% was introduced. Or you can also introduce other stronger perturbation, like perturbation in the radial component, the velocity. In this case, was something like 2% of the speed of light. And then in this case, of course, you can increase the amount of energy that is transmitted by gravitational waves. But still, these values are very, very low. If you try to compute the signal-to-noise ratio for a gravitational wave detector for this kind of object, then you will get something that is larger than one, so that could be maybe detected, but only if you assume that the source is inside our galaxy. And it's very unlucky that in our life we will see a neutron star collapse in our galaxy. Now, all these simulations show the same dynamics that I showed you in the movie before. So the collapse is always symmetric. So we're trying to think how to increase the signal, maybe having a source that doesn't collapse maintaining axisymmetry, but can develop deviation from axisymmetry. And so we started to have a look in differentially rotating neutron stars. So differential rotation is usually expected in neutron stars that can be formed at the end of core collapse or supernova, or at the end of the merger of a binary system of neutron stars. So we know that such neutron stars exist. With differential rotation, you can get a very fast rotation. You can get values that are even above the Kerr limit, J O N squared. And when you have a star that has a J O N squared larger than one, it cannot collapse immediately of the core, because otherwise you will have a naked singularity. So something should try remove angular momentum, for example, the development of non-axisymmetric instabilities.
Could also be partial collapse, right? I mean, you could collapse a linear region that is below the curve, and the matter, the rest of the matter can stay outside.
Induced, yes. Sir.
Have you guys seen that? That you are super carried, you assume that everything collapses, but only kind of some inner region collapses like that, or the rest things.
No, we didn't observe something like that. But it also depends how you trigger the collapse. This is something that I will mention later. So we consider four different models for differentially rotating neutron stars. Three of these models have a value of J1 squared less than one, and this parameter gives you essentially the degree of differential rotation. The higher this number, the closer to uniform rotation you are. And then we also consider one model, which is called this B1, in which instead you have a value of J1 squared larger than one, in this case 1.09. And this is a comparison with respect to the previous model. So these are the uniformly rotating neutron stars that I showed before. And the red triangles are the models that I'm going to show now. So these models, A1, A2, A3, had a value of J omega squared less than 1, while B1 had a value larger than 1. And as you can see, you can also get quite large masses, in the order 2.4, 2.5 solar masses.
So is that number known well? What is the maximum mass that a star can have if you allow for arbitrary
degrees of differential rotation? Or is there a number found there against the issue of the stability of differential rotation is something that is not so well defined as in the case of uniform rotation. For uniform rotation, you have exactly, I mean, you know exactly if a model is a stable or unstable. For differential rotation, it's not really clear. What we try to do is to generate models that have value of the central density that they would put them in a stable branch if they were a uniformly rotating star. And we saw that these models were all unstable. But then, I cannot give you a precise answer.
Can I back to Luis's earlier question about whether just the inner part could collapse when it appears to be a super critical spinning? In the differentially rotating models that you guys take, if you evaluated J over M squared for smaller and smaller radii, would J over M squared for the ratio go up or
down? I didn't have a look at that, actually. So, yeah, I have to say that I don't know. I don't have the answer. I didn't have a look.
There was a work by Shibata in 2006 or so, plus minus 1 year, where they actually did that. And they see that, at least for their models, because you can tune your differential rotation any way you want. So in their models, it was true that the J over X squared would go below one. Mm-hmm. And in those simulations, the inner part would collapse only this itself.
Well, you're smaller, mass quantum means you're going lower and lower, angle of one and to stable.
But I mean, in those units, the limit J over M squared is equal to 1 is infinite size.
And you could pick your density any way you want. I mean, you can just artificially make the density much higher or much lower towards the center to go either way in that.
Okay.
So for comparison with the movie that I showed you before, I showed similar movie for the collapse of one of these differential rotating interstars. This is the model that we labeled as A2, in which J on the square is 0.82. So as you see, the model is not spherical at all. It looks actually quite toroidal in the sense that the maximum rest mass density is not anymore located at the center of the star, but it's shifted outside. And what I'm showing here is still the volume rendering of the rest mass density. So you start the evolution, and what you will see that the collapse looks very, very similar. With this yellow, you have the specific internal energy, so you can access it to a temperature actually. So the star collapse, maintaining essentially a symmetry. You have an horizon forming, all the matter goes inside. And then at the end, you are just left with the Kerr black hole, no matter outside. So the dynamics look very, very similar to what you've seen in the uniformly rotating case. And if you compute the energy that is emitted by this model, it's even worse the situation, because here you have again the same picture I showed you before. So the energy emitted by gravitational waves is a function of J omega squared. And when you go increase the value of J omega squared, actually the energy emission decreases. So it's even worse. We were hoping to increase the energy emission via gravitational wave, but the situation is the opposite. And actually, you can fit this curve and you see that it actually fits very well also with the trend with uniform rotation. Because if you look at uniform rotation, you have an increase, you reach a maximum, and then it starts to decrease again here. And then if you increase J omega squared going to differential rotation, then it goes down again.
But that should be necessarily a general case, because you could.
Well, it is for this differential rotation and without perturbation at the beginning. And so there are ingredients that can be changed. But if you assume that you use this differential rotation, you don't introduce any perturbation in the nomination model and so on, this is the kind of picture that you get. And if you go and compute the signal to noise ratio, you still get values that are larger than one, but only assuming a source of 10 kiloparsecs. So which means inside our galaxy. So there is no way that you are going to see this object unless we are very, very, very lucky. So we also investigated the collapse of super-Kerr models, so models that have a J omega squared larger than one. This is the model V1. It's almost flat. It's really, it's a clear toroidal shape. The problem is that this model is very, very stable. And so in order to force it to collapse, we have to deplete the pressure by 99%, which means a lot.
You're going to try with adding like the
radar
velocity, like before, or?
With this, no. We tried to perturbate the pressure with different values, and we were not able to get it to collapse unless reducing the pressure by 99%. This is something similar to what also Shapiro did previously, some years ago. He studied a similar model. So here, there is a movie showing the collapse of this model. So again, with the colors going from blue to yellow, you have the rest mass density, and then you will also see the temperature with the values going, with colors going from red to white, with temperature, and the temperature goes from, the 10 to the 10 to the 12 Kelvin, these are the units. So at the beginning, the camera, the camera zoom in, then it rotates to show you that this model is not spherical at all, it's almost flat, as I told you, it's almost a torus. Then here the evolution starts. The object collapses immediately, producing a stroke shock that go out. And then it forms a torus that fragments in four pieces that then merge again at the center until the matter is able to find a new stable configuration, which is essentially a new neutral star, which is stable and doesn't do anything more. It doesn't collapse to black holes. It simply stays there. So this model will be really interesting from the point of view of gravitational waves, because you see huge deviation from axisymmetry. There is this fragmentation, for example, of the torus, and this will emit a lot of gravitational waves. The point that this model will be completely unrealistic. As I told you, we had to deplete the pressure by 99%. And there is a reason for that. We did a study of the initial model trying to understand if you can get an unstable differential rotating neutron star with a J omega squared less larger than one. And our conclusion was actually that no, I mean, all the neutron stars that have a ratio J omega squared larger than one looks to be stable, at least for this differential rotation in this equation of state. What can change the picture is, for example, if you have some sort of maybe phase transition inside the star. So, for example, the core collapse, and then, of course, you could have a more natural way to have a collapsing black hole. But if you want to study the stability of these models, then there is no way that you can go over J omega squared equal to 1 and then produce an unstable neutron stars. So for the second part of the talk, instead of we concentrate about binary neutron stars, this is a work that has been done in the more recent work done in collaboration with Luca Baiotti and Luciano Rizzolla, and then if I have time, also more recent work that was submitted to the archive 1 month ago that was done in collaboration also with David Link and Jose Font. So we are interested in binary neutron stars for two reasons. First of all, they are very powerful sources of gravitational waves. So the signal coming from neutron star can be actually observed by advanced detectors, gravitational wave detectors, like Virgo in Italy or LIGO in the US. But they're also interesting because they are thought to be the engine of very interesting astrophysical phenomena like gamma ray burst. So there is an interest in studies jumping not only from the point of view of gravitational wave emission, but also from the point of view of gamma ray burst. So in our first work, we consider the last part on a spiral and merger of an equal mass binary neutron star system in which the two neutron stars have the same masses. And we consider two cases. One is called low mass, in which the two neutron stars have masses of 1.45 solar masses, and the high mass case, in which the two neutron stars had a mass of 1.62 solar masses. Also in this case, we're using very simple equation of state, like polytropic or radial fluid equation of state. So since we love movies, I show you another movie about this time evolution, this binary neutron star system. So what you will see here is with volume rendering the value of the mass density, and this is the computational domain on which the problem was solved. So the camera simply zoom in to have a look closer at the binary system, then it rotates. And now the evolution starts. So this is, as I said before, an equal mass binary neutron system. This is the high mass case, I've already got a polytropic equation of state. The neutron star orbits around each other for around 2.5 orbits. You can also see some tidal waves moving on the surface of the neutron stars. After two orbits and a half, they start to merge. There is also the development of some turbulence here, but I will not have time to speak about that. Then also the cores merge, and then the final object is so massive that collapse immediately to a black hole. But in this time, because you have a lot of matter that still have a lot of angular momentum, you have deformation of a disk matter around the black hole.
How much mass do you have in the disk?
These are very low mass, was they are 10 to the minus 2 solar masses. So in order for the gamma ray burst, usually people think that the mass should be larger than 10 to the minus 2 solar masses. I will show you some models in which you can get masses of the order 0.1, 0.2 solar masses, and that will be sufficiently massive to provide energy for the gamma ray burst. So this picture what you have seen in the movie is quite general. Usually when you have a binary neutron star system and you have this kind of evolution, so the spiral, then the merger, then the collapse to black hole. But there is, this picture is quite qualitative. You can see some changes if you, for example, change the initial mass of the system. So what I'm showing now is the evolution is the same movie, but done for the low mass binary neutron star. So a system in which a two neutron star have lower masses. So the moves here will go faster. The evolution is quite similar for the part on the spiral, just the movie goes faster. So it's not slow as the one before. And you still see the volume rendering on the resin mass density. Here the camera is simply rotating. The evolution starts, so you have an spiral, also in this case it's 2.5 orbits. Then the merge, but the object that is formed at the end is not so massive to cause immediate collapse to black hole, but actually form an hypermassive neutron star, which is the form that produces a bar mode instability. So you have this bar rotating, this emits a lot of gravitational waves that carry away angular momentum. And then when the system has lost a sufficient amount of angular momentum, then it's finally able to collapse a black hole. And again, you have still some mass outside the black hole forming a disk. And the mass of the disk is similar to the disk that you've seen before. When you look at the gravitational wave signal emitted by the system, of course, you can see the difference in the dynamics. So in the case of the high mass system, you have the part related to the spiral, which is essentially this one. Then you have the merger when you have amplification of the signal. And in the case of high mass, then you have immediately the collapse to the black hole, and this is essentially the ring down of the black hole. In the case of the low mass system, instead, you are still in a spiral, not also the different times. It's just 10 milliseconds, this is 25 milliseconds. So you have a spiral. And then the formation is a supermassive neutron star that develops at bar, and this emits a lot of gravitational waves at constant frequency. So this is this part of the signal up to here, until it loses sufficient amount of angular momentum to be able to collapse to black hole. And then you again, you see the collapse and the, well, the ring down, you cannot see it very well from this picture. Another important piece that can change the gravitational waves is the equation of state. So the two movies I showed you before were using a very simple polytropic equation of state, which is given by this expression, where P is the pressure, rho is the resin mass density, kappa is a constant, and gamma is a constant, and gamma was chosen to be equal to. This equation of state has the property that is isentropic, so essentially you cannot develop shocks or shocks hitting. We evolved the same models, while instead of using the polytropic equation of state, we moved and used an ideal fluid equation of state, which is still an idealistic equation of state. But in this case, you can allow the formation of shocks, and in particular of shock hitting. So you can allow for the increase in thermal energy. So in the movie I'm showing you is again the high mass case. So the first movie I showed for the binary neutron star, the one in which a neutron star merges and collapses immediately to a black hole. The only difference now is that instead of evolving this cold polytropic equation of state, we are evolving it with the ideal fluid equation of state. This is the only difference. So again, here the camera is simply zooming. Rotating. And then you have the evolution, the two stars orbit around each other again for 2.5 orbits. Then they merge, but when they merge, there is formation of shocks that increase the temperature and so increase the pressure. So the central object is not able to collapse immediately to a black hole because of extra contribution to the pressure, but essentially to cause bounce to each other for a few times, until also in this case is able to lose a sufficient amount of angular momentum to be able to collapse to a black hole surrounded by atolls. The interesting point is that when you allow for shock heating increase in temperature, the torus is much different. While before what we had was just a disk essentially, so very, very thin. In this case, you have really a thicker torus. The mass are still comparable to.
And in this case, do you expect to have a larger signal?
So, yes, because what you have is that so essentially, this is the comparison between a gravitational wave signal emitted when you use a polytropic or an ideal fluid equation of state. So the part during the spiral is very different. But what you get in the polytropic case, you collapse immediately to a black hole, and then you don't have any other gravitational signal. In the case of ideal fluid, you form instead this hypermassive neutron star that is able to survive for a longer time, in this case around 10 milliseconds before it collapse. So you don't have only the signal coming from the spiral, but you also have this periodic signal coming from the hypermassive neutron star. And if you go to consider the low mass case, the one that in the polytropic case will also take in something like 10, 15 milliseconds before to collapse, then the situation there is even better. Because in the case of ideal fluid, you have this signal. And in this case, we didn't evolve until the collapse, at least not in this paper. But if you solve this system until it collapses to black hole, then it will survive for something like 120 milliseconds. So when you integrate the signal, then this gives you a very big peak in the frequency associated with the oscillation of this neutron star.
The first one is pretty cool. What happens after the hypermassive star is where a new star is formed? See that it has some frequency. That's the star that is going around, but it also has this modulation, and this in the correlated frame, it's going just. So then you have this kind of first thing here.
Yeah, this is essentially due to the new course that we're bouncing with. So this is essentially the gravitational wave spectrum. So this is the Fourier transform of the gravitational wave signal as a function of frequency in kilohertz. So most of the detectors are usually sensible, very good sensitivity up to 1 kilohertz, more or less. And here I'm showing on the left the frequency from the high mass models, and on the right the low mass models. And in blue, in both the cases, the polytropic cold equational state, and with the red is the ideal fluid. So you have this peak, which is in common with both the equational state, it's simply related to the last part of the spiral. But there are differences at frequency larger than 2 kHz, which are essentially due to the contribution coming from the post-merger evolution. So, for example, in the case of the NMAS, the blue collapses immediately to a black hole, so you just have essentially the peak coming from the last part of the spiral, and then maybe the ring down the black hole. In the case of ideal fluid, instead, you have deformation of this hypermassive neutron star that survives for around 10 milliseconds, and so you can see different peaks at higher frequencies. In the case of the low mass binary, in both the cases, you have formation of hypermassive neutron star, but this collapses very fast, so you have these peaks. But if you go to ideal fluid, then you have much more powerful peak. And actually, this was obtained only integrating a small part of the signal, not the full signal. So we also investigated the role that the magnetic field can have on the gravitational waves that are emitted by this system. In this case, we are considering the equal mass binary neutron star, but just with the ideal fluid equation of state. And so what we did was to compare the same initial model that we considered before, but when adding a magnetic field to the initial model. So on the top, you have the gravitational wave signal coming from the low mass binaries, and on the bottom, from the high mass binary. With the black line, you have the gravitational wave signal that is emitted when you don't have a magnetic field. And with the red line instead is the gravitational signal that is emitted when you have an initial magnetic field as large as 10 to the 17 Gauss. And what you see is that you start to have deviation differences between the two signals even during the last part of the spiral. This is essentially the end of the spiral for the unmagnetized case, while the magnetized case and the spiral a bit later. And then you have strong difference also after the merger. In particular, in the high mass case, as you have seen before, you have after the merger, essentially almost immediately the collapse to black hole. While if you add the magnetic field so large, then essentially you are adding to the pressure an extra contribution, which is due to the magnetic pressure. And this is so strong that it's able to delay the collapse to black hole. Now, the problem is that people believe that binary neutron star at the time of the merger will have magnetic fields that are much smaller than 10 to the 17 Gauss. So this case of 10 to the 17 Gauss is considered quite unrealistic. So we tried to compute the difference that you can get from signal emitted during the spiral of binary neutron star with different magnetic field. So, and we're trying to understand if a detector can distinguish between these two signals. And what you can do is to compute the overlap between these gravitational waves that is emitted by a system without magnetic field with a gravitational wave that is emitted by a system with an initial magnetic field, which is 10 to the 17 or 10 to the 14 or 10 to the 12. If the overlap is less than 1, it means that a detector like Advanced LIGO, for example, will be able to see the difference. If the overlap is order 1, then there will be no possibility that the detector can distinguish between the two waves. And what you get is that essentially, unless you go to the very large realistic fields, there is no way that the detectors can see the difference in the gravitational waves emitted during the spiral or a binary neutron star when you have a magnetic field of order 10 to the 14 or less. So you don't expect to observe effect of the magnetic field in the signal coming from the spiral or neutron stars. So then we started to ask ourselves if can see at least an effect of this realistic field like 10 to the 12 Gauss in the part of the signal that is emitted by the hypermassive neutral star that is evolved, is formed after the merger. So this is again the gravitational wave signal emitted by the high mass model without magnetic field, the black line, or with a magnetic field of 10 to the 12 Gauss. In this case, what happens is that the magnetic field of 10 to the 12 Gauss doesn't add any contribution essentially to the total pressure, because the magnetic pressure is much, much smaller than the gas pressure. And what happens, so is not able to derive the collapse. But actually what happens is that the magnetic field is able to redistribute the angular momentum inside the star, and so it even accelerates the collapse. The problem is that if you look at the spectrum, this is again a spectrum as a function of the frequency, and these are the different sensitivity curves for different gravitational wave detectors like Virgo, Advanced LIGO, and the Einstein telescope. And if you plot the curves, they are almost on top of each other. So it seems quite difficult to be able to distinguish between a signal emitted by an unmagnetized or a magnetized binary with a magnetic field of 10 to the 12. The situation changes if you consider a system in which you have an hypermassive neutral star, which evolves for a longer time, because in that case, of course, the magnetic field has more time to affect the dynamics. And again, this is the gravitational wave signal emitted from the low mass binary without a magnetic field, black curve, and with a magnetic field, red curve. And if you look at the spectrum, you start to appreciate some differences, but only a frequency of 2 kHz or larger. In particular, you see that this peak at 2 kHz, that is inside the advanced LIGO band, start to be shifted at a higher frequency, and then you start also to see a difference in the peaks after the collapse. Even this will not be able to be detected even by an Einstein telescope. But these peaks are perfect inside advanced LIGO bands. So we also considered an equal mass binary neutral star, so a system in which the two neutral stars don't have the same masses. In this case, we just submitted a paper 1 month ago. So in this case, we didn't consider yet the effect of magnetic field. So this one is without magnetic field for the moment. And in this case, we wanted to investigate the possibility to form a larger tori at the end of the simulation. So in the case of the equal mass binary neutral star, as I said before, you have masses that are of the order of 10 to the 2 solar masses or less, and with the density there of the 10 to the 11 gram per cubic centimeter, and they are pretty hot, of the order of 10 to 11 Kelvin. And the black hole at the center is masses, for example, in Anna's case, a mass of 2.9, and in all the cases, it's a quite fast spinning curve black hole with spin of 0.8 or 0.7, depending on the initial mode. So we considered seven different initial models with different mass ratio. So this one is again an equal mass binaries, and then when you go down, the difference between the masses increases, so the mass ratio decreases. And the total mass of the system was chosen to be very, very high, because in this work we wanted to form a black hole as fast as possible. So we didn't want to, because of computational reasons, we didn't want to wait for the hypermassive neutral star to collapse to black hole. So we chose an initial mass that was sufficiently high to trigger essentially immediate collapse to black hole. And these are the masses of the two neutral stars, the gravitational masses of the two neutral stars. So this is a case, in, for example, in which the total mass was 3.4 and the mass ratio was 0.8. What I'm showing in this movie is the volume rendering of the rest mass density of the neutral star. You can see that the neutral star are not equal. This one is a bit more compact. You also have you cannot see probably, but you have a higher density at the center. So you start the evolution. And what happens is that the less compact star start to be tidally disrupted by the most compact star. You have formation even on this tidal wave. Then the central object collapses immediately to black hole, but you have a huge amount of memory that is, sorry, of matter that is ejected outside, and it will eventually fall back on the disk. And here the camera is just rotating to have a look at the torus that is formed at the end. So this is a central black hole, torus. And then we just cut to have a look.
Bruno, we were made with the ideal. Yes,
this is still the ideal fluid equation of state. We are not using anymore the polytropic equation of state. We computed then for different models the mass of the torus that we can expect. So these green square boxes are the mass of the torus that can, you can obtain at the end of the evolution or equal mass binary neutron star, and as I told you, they're all quite low. But if you start to reduce the mass ratio, so you increase the difference between the mass and the neutron star, you can get torus that are with masses as large as 0.2 or 0.3 solar masses. And then we also tried to compute a sort of fit of the different points that we have, so the surface will be the fit from our simulation. Yeah. If you look at the gravitational wave signal, you also see differences between the different models. It is quite interesting because you can relate the difference with the formation or not of a very massive torus. So here you have the gravitational wave signal emitted, for example, for an equal mass binary neutron star. Here for a binary neutron star system, which is a mass ratio of 0.94. And this for a binary neutron system, which has a very low mass ratio of 0.7. And so what you see that in all the cases, you essentially have the signal related to the spiral. But in the equal mass case, you can also see very well the signal of the ring down of the black hole. Well, if you decrease the mass ratio, the ring down becomes very weak or even disappears. And this is due to the fact that in this case, for example, you have a very massive torus of 0.2, 0.3 solar masses. And this essentially prevented the black hole to ring down.
So you're saying it is because of the disk, or is it because
of the mass of the disk that is falling down on the black hole? Yeah, because of the accretion on the black hole. So I think to summarize, what I wanted to show you that numerical relativity and also our code are able to solve without problem different problems like including single neutron star or binary neutron star system. In the case of neutron star to collapse to black hole, the signal seems to be very, very weak and not very interesting from the point of view of gravitational wave detector at the moment. Instead, the binary neutron star producing very strong signal could be detected by the next generation gravitational wave detectors. Effects of the mass and the equation of states can be detected both in the spiral and the signal after the merger. If you want to detect instead the magnetic field, then this could be detected only after the merger and on frequencies which are quite high, or there are 2 kHz or larger. So it means that you need detectors that are very sensitive at these frequencies. If you want to connect an evolution of binary neutron star with the possible formation of gamma ray bursts, then in the case of an equal mass binary neutron star, you can have the production of massive torus with masses larger than 0.1, and this could provide the energy sufficient to launch a short HRB. And in particular, since the formation of this massive torus can also be correlated with a feature in the gravitational wave signal, as I told you, essentially the ring down part disappear, a correlation between a gamma ray burst and a gravitational wave signal could also give the possibility to validate this model as possible sources of gamma ray burst. And these are the future things in which we are looking at. So these are other stuff we are going to add in our code in order to be able to simulate more realistic scenarios like adding neutrino emission that is very important when you have a hypermassive neutron star and also an evolutionary disk. We are going to increase the level of realism in our equation of state because of the equation state we are using up to now idea. And then we are going also to include the effect of resistive MHD. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Where's the timing? He asked me how long to the top lead, let's say 45 minutes.
Well,
so the main difference in waveforms is due to equations of state, looks like, at this point in time. The main difference in the waveforms is due to differences in the equation of state. It's not appears to the same.
Which case?
For the binary transfer, as far as.
The main difference is given, there are several factors that change the waves, which are the total mass, the mass ratio, the equation of states has an impact on that. So these are the
magnetic field changes are very, very subtle. Could you even distinguish those?
Yeah, in magnetic field, it's very, very difficult.
But it depends, right? So, depending on the mass ratio, you have huge differences. Now, if you add magnetic fields, and he has one of the separate massive neutron stars that lasts for a long time, then the magnetic field.
Yes, you need that. I mean, if you want to see some difference.
Right.
Yes.
So it depends. If you're talking about log binary chaos and equal mass binaries, yes, and the equation state is pretty much what we can. But we know binary chaos are there, we know lots of things that could influence their behavior. So it would depend on how massive they are, how long they last, for the
And you're using Lorraine initial data?
Yes, initial data from Lorraine, yes, so they are public available.
What are the constraints?
Sorry?
How do the constraints look for energy?
So I don't have a, I mean, in our paper, we have plots from the constraints. And I mean we don't see any problem with the, I don't know what is the such a, I mean.
You can have these zero velocity constraint violations. I'll talk with Peter about it. So it's nice if the constraint violations propagate off the grid, right? But they don't necessarily.
So what we have a look at is the evolution of the, for example, of the norms of the constraints. I mean, a look, and they are pretty stable over, I mean, they increase slowly over time, but they're pretty okay, and they also check convergence in our results.
But what's the frequency profile of them, out of curiosity?
The frequency?
High frequency noise, essentially, or is that sort of low frequency?
For the evaluation of the constraints?
For the constraint evaluation.
I don't know. I didn't have a look at that. So.
Just curious. But they do slowly increase over time?
If you look at the norm, yes, they slowly increase over time. So, and we also check with the resolution that, I mean, the decrease, the evaluation decrease. So we check that we are consistent and that there is no problem from that.
Just curious.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you use the initial data from Lorraine, there is a problem due to the fact that these initial data are on quasi-circular orbits, so they don't have any radial component. So I don't know if this is what you were mentioning before. When instead, I mean, if you take a system that starts from infinity and arrive at the moment, it should have a radial component. And so, for example, if you look at the waveforms carefully, you can see that there is a sort of burst radiation at the beginning due to the fact that the solution is adjusting itself, essentially. So, but that effect seems to be pretty small, at least for what we are interested. I think that people doing binary because they are trying to compute much more accurate waveforms, and so they want to get rid of this effect.
Very nice question. So you mentioned that if you have switched on magnetic fields, then in a very high mass case, the magnetic fields slow down the formation of black holes.
Yes.
So what is the intuitive reason for that? Why it happens only for very high mass?
So this is due to the fact that the magnetic field contributes to the total pressure. So when you have a magnetic field, you have the total pressure is given by the pressure of the gas plus essentially B squared, which is the magnetic pressure. So when you have a magnetic field as larger as 10 to the 17, the ratio of magnetic pressure to gas pressure is over 2-3%. So it starts to be a sensible amount of pressure that you are adding. When you go to 10 to the 12 Gauss, for example, you are going down on 5 order of magnitudes on the magnetic field, but the magnetic pressure goes like B squared, so you are going down on 10 order of magnitudes the pressure. So if it was of the order 10 to the minus 2, the ratio between magnetic pressure and gas pressure was the order 10 to the minus 2, for 10 to the 17 Gauss. In the case of 10 to the 12 Gauss, will be 10 to the minus 12. So it's completely negligible.
Did you say slow down or speed up?
The one in which you have the 10 to the 17 Gauss, that slow down. Because, I mean, essentially you have two effects on the magnetic field. One is the contribution of magnetic pressure, and the other one is the distribution of angular momentum. If you have a magnetic field that is very, very larger than what we see, essentially the magnetic pressure win, and this delay the collapse. If you start to go down to more realistic value, then the magnetic pressure doesn't have any role at all, and so you only have the distribution angular momentum, and this speed up the collapse.
Any other question? But you need a decent asymmetry. Well, actually, the asymmetry in mass doesn't have to be that large to get a decent. We should just point it out.
So to have a decent accretion disk, you have to go to mass ratio order 0.8. I mean, the largest disk that we get was for a mass ratio 0.7. The point that for neutron star, I mean, if you look at studies from people that do population theory and try to understand what is the mass ratio in neutron star, it seems that they are usually close to be equal mass. So 1, 0.9, something like that.
But even when it was low, it was still 1% or 2%.
Yeah, it's not too bad, but...
So
I mean,
you're more efficient at sending out a disk than the black hole neutron star counterpart.
That J,
sorry?
3.625.
Right, so that was
The one that only has 8 million years to go. It has, I thought the cube is decently large. The ratio of mass is decently far away from one. Anyway. The binary full swarm system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the large stars are supposed not to be rotating too fast. First, no differential rotation, and second, not rotating too fast. But they are the binary for it could be a selection effect. I mean, they used to be not very fast rotating, and then they found a millisecond pulsars. That's okay, they are rotating faster, but that's not a lot faster. Now, I was at a meeting where this professor from McGill was saying that there is a concentrated effort to try to find the pulsars. I had a nanosecond pulsar. So, that's kind of possible.
Yeah, they found that.
They rotate that fast. Mm. But if they find 100 nanoseconds, it's like, well, you keep allowing yourself to move the bar further and further. And
yeah, but they will also spin down, no? So when you arrive at the time of the merger, anyway, you or not.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what is the prediction, but anyway, in all these cases, since we're using Lorentz initial data, these are essentially non-rotating neutron stars. They are slowly rotating.
Well, I was thinking on the realistic case. What's happening
to nature? Yes, yeah, so it's not about approximation. So we know the binaries where we have millisecond pulsars. The millisecond pulsars are not very complicated, even though they're fairly fast. I mean, approximately 4 hours, they're not that crazy. If you look at the JRM of those, it would be the fun one.
And probably the only effect to, the only possibility to get a lot of mass on the disk is the next ratio.
I mean, this is 1% is pretty easy.
Just to be sure that.
Yeah, but it seems that, I mean, we still have, because, I mean, different groups seems to have a different result. Because if you look, for example, Shibata, it uses a different equation of state also, and it gets lower masses for the equal mass case. And so, this is something we'll be able to change. In the case of mixed binaries, it actually seems that you can get large disk if you go to fastly spinning black hole.
What I'm saying is, if you think of the black hole, it's a star where there is no spin.
Okay, yes. That there is no chance that you see anything.
The problem is that one, you should always have surfaces that they smash against each other and take stuff out. And the other one, when they smash, with the one sucks the other.
Well, for the single neutron, collapse to black hole, collapse to black hole, collapse. If you have a supernova, there's a decent chance that the form neutron star initially and decrease. I guess the mass has to be about 1.5 small masses. Isn't that Christian Ott saying you don't get direct collapse to black hole, you always want neutron star first?
Right, but the disk is not huge. Mm-hmm. Well, it depends how asymmetric the collapse is.
Well, aren't all small mass black holes formed that way? Is the idea you get neutron star first, it creates and it collapses to black hole? Maybe it creates enough stuff from the
Yeah, well, there are some that collapse directly to the black hole. I thought Christian
was saying you always
need to transfer first. I also tend to remember that he was saying that in his simulation, what you see is not a direct collapse of black hole, but always you pass through the formation of a neutral star. Yeah, but probably not.
not
too bad.
Sorry? More of a new for supernova, I guess. Yes. What's the fraction of white dwarf collapse to collapse?
No idea.
Okay, let's make
a window
again.
Can I keep this? No.